jina magasajus insemmilkom nil-qakom għal-program liħor il-ħrejjef, l-erf u l-maġija. U illum għandi ħrafa verament speċjali għalikom. Ħrafa romantika li turi l-importanza tal-imħabba u r-rabta tal-relazzjonijiet speċjalment dawk familjari. Ħrafa ukoll adulta, filosofika u misterjuża. Kitbita mara blisem ta' Sophie Tieck minn Berlin li għexet bejn l-1755 u l-1833. Kienet ġejja minn familja umli. Fil-fatt, in-nisa li tkellimna dwarhom f'dan il-programm, in-nisa Ġermaniżi, kienu ftit jewis kollha ġejjin minn familji vantaġġjati ħafna minnhom nobli. Però din kienet ġejja minn familja umli, fejn il-missier kien jagħmel il-ħbula. Huta, Christian Friedrich Tieck, kien skultur, u Ludwig Tieck kien poeta, kritiku u kittieb. U wieħed mill-fundaturi tal-Movement Romantiku ta' 18 u 19-il seklu ġol Ġermanja. Sufi wkoll kienet parti minn dan il-Movement. Iż-żewġet li s-sur Mast kittieb u membru tal-Movement Romantiku lill-August Ferdinand Benhardi. Iżda għalkemm kellhom tliet tfal, iż-żwieġ tagħhom intemm fl-1805, billi kellha relazzjoni ma' raġel ieħor li sem ta' August Wilhelm Schlegel li kien ukoll fundatur tal-Movement Romantiku Ġermaniż. Imbagħad wara meta spiċċat din ir-relazzjoni iż-żewġet lill-baruni Karl Gregor von Knoring. Sophie kienet tifforma parti mis-soċjetà intellettwali li kienu jattendu l-aqwa salotti ta' Berlin, magħrufin bħala s-Salonier, tiftakru, kellimna ħafna dwarhom dawn is-Salonier li kienu jiltaqgħu ġo s-salotti tagħhom u jitkellmu dwar affarijiet li kienu jmissuhom il-qrib, bħal pereżempju id-drittijiet tal-mara, l-ugwaljanza minn kull aspett soċjali u ħafna affarijiet illi kienu jolqtuhom il-qrib. Issa, għalkemm ħafna mill-kittieba nisa kienu jinterrompu l-karriera tal-kitba kif kienu jiżżewġu, fil-każ ta' Sophie dan ma seħx. Illum il-ġurnata il-kitba ta' Sophie ġiet rikonoxxuta bħala kontribut validu għal-Movement Romantiku. Kienet influenza ta' ħafna minn huwa Ludwig u jingħad li kien hemm relazzjoni mhux ta' soltu bejn dawn iż-żewġ taħwa. It-tnejn flimkien kienu jirreċtaw id-drammi li kien jikteb huwa u ittraduċew id-drammi ta' Shakespeare flimkien u kienu jaqraw flimkien xogħlijiet ta' l-Enlightenment. Il-qari kien isir ukoll ma' Salonier, pal pereżempju kien ikun hemm preżenti magħhom id-dukessa Anna Amalie ta' Weimar. Sophie kienet bħala ghostwriter, kif kienu ħafna min-nisa ta' dak iż-żmien, kienet tikteb u ma tissemmix. Għamlet ħafna xogħol għal huwa Ludwig u koll traduċiet ħafna testi mill-Franċiż għad-direttur mużikali Joseph Wesley. Meta kienet miż-żewġa lil Bernardi, l-ewwel raġel tagħha, da kien jippubblika ġo ġurnal u kien juża xogħlijiet tagħha u jippubblikhom taħt ismu. Kienet diffiċli ħafna biex mara tiġi rikonoxxuta bħala kittieba, għalhekk Sophie batiet ħafna sakemm affermat lilha nfisha bħala kittieba. Billi Sophie ma setax taċċetta l-fatt illi traduttur kien meqjus bħala xi ħaġa inferjuri, ikkummentat hekk. Wenn man selbst nicht erschaffen kann, ist doch gewiss der größte Genuss, sich in die Schöpfung eines großes Geistes so ganz zu vertiefen, wie man es beim Übersetzen tun muss. F'kelma waħda kien qiegħda tgħid li jekk wieħed ma jistax jivvinta, jikrea storja, hija l-aktar ħaġa pjaċevoli li wieħed jidħol fil-menti tal-bniedem li jkun qed jikteb l-istorja biex jittraduċi dik l-istorja. Il-ħrafa li għandna lilkom illum, The Old Man and the Cave, turi l-interess li kellhom ir-romantiċi Ġermaniżi fil-ħolm, fil-viżjonijiet u f'dak kollu lill-moħħ ma setax jifhem. Hawnhekk naraw kif il-protagonista jikseb għarfien kbir mhux permezz tal-intellettwaliżmu, iżda billi jerġa' jikseb l-armonija f'ħajtu. Ix-xieħ tal-ar jerġa jikseb din l-armonija billi jerġa' jirċievi l-imħabba ta' familtu u żżażuh isib l-imħabba f'sieħba li jkun sab bis-saħħa tal-għajnuna li jagħti x-xieħ. Jixraq li tisimgħuha kollha din il-ħrafa, però kelli nagħżel biss siltiet minna għaliex twila ħafna. U taraw kien intelligenti din il-kittieba Sophie Tieck Berhardi von Knoring, se taraw ukoll kemm hija ħrafa maġika u misterjuża li ġalek tibqa tisma sakemm in-narratur iħoll il-koppa imħabla ta' viżjonijiet strambi. Mela ejjew nisimgħuha. The Old Man and the Cave. Time long past, there lived in the darkest part of the forest an old man whom no one knew. In the whole region thereabouts he was called the Old Man in the Cave, or the Kind Sorcerer, for everyone who came to him and sought his counsel went away consoled. Villagers and townspeople alike came to ask him about their problematic cases. If they brought him a small gift, he accepted it thankfully. But if one of the rich ones thought that he had compensated him sufficiently for his counsel by handing him a pile of gold pieces, then the old sage smiled and laid the coins to one side, and the next poor soul who came to him needing aid left happier and richer. It was a pleasant morning, and the old man sat before the cave smiling. He watched the sunbeams gliding each leaf, and observed how only the gentlest breeze was necessary to chase the leaves out of the brilliant shimmering into the darkest shadows.
"Oh, you image of human fate," he exclaimed. "A small wind can touch you, and then suddenly you stand with all your brilliant blossoms and sinister shadow."
While he was talking to himself like this, a youth approached him, a thoughtful expression on his face. "People tell me that you're a wise sorcerer."
"Well then, what is it you seek?"
"I wish," said the youth, "that you would bestow on me the gift of seeing my own thoughts standing before me after I have crafted them, so that I might be able to judge what my soul is thinking, and whether it deserves to be called good or evil, clever or naive. I know that this is much to ask, dear old man, but my gratitude will know no bounds."
"It is less than you think," said the old man. "But I do not believe that you will thank me for this gift. I will do nothing more than increase the strength of your vision, so that you may see the images your soul creates and sends out into the world. But I repeat, you will not thank me. For one whole year you must bear seeing all your thoughts and resolutions. When the year is over, return to my cave again, and I will relieve you of this burden that you now wish upon yourself."
He rose, and was about to return to the city, when at his feet he suddenly saw a small, short-sighted, misshapen figure wearing a huge pair of spectacles on his nose. Leonard shrank back at the sight of this ridiculous monster, and was about to run away, when the creature disappeared into thin air.
"What on earth?" cried the astonished youth.
"Was that supposed to be the embodiment of my thoughts?"
He thought the same thought again, and the ridiculous figure with the spectacles approached again.
"You evil sorcerer," cried Leonard. "You mock me, and are trying to show me my thoughts are all distorted."
After he spoke these words, he saw near him a child who stared at him with an utterly stupid look, then hurried to catch up with and join the misshapen figure.
"Well," said Leonard with contempt, "I have to admit my soul has sent a fine pair of replicas of itself out into the world."
He had barely ended this speech when a young lout with black curly hair and fiery eyes stood next to the others and looked at them with hatred.
"My search for wisdom seems to be off to a pretty bad start," said Leonard. "It would have been better if I had not asked the old man for this gift."
A young boy with straight blonde hair and blue eyes, not handsome and not misshapen, stood next to him. His face was neither stupid nor intelligent. He looked indifferently at Leonard and joined the others.
"Well, this is a fine state of affairs," cried Leonard angrily. "Of my four thoughts so far, only one is even slightly tolerable. And even this one is a thought of regret. So what good is he to me? If I cannot summon up anything more sensible than this, but can only mildly regret the stupid things I thought, then I wish that I could destroy the whole lot of them."
He stepped into the midst of his thoughts and tried to shoo them away, but far from being frightened of him, they closed in around him.
"Is it not possible for me to think anything sensible," he cried, "so that this whole brood will leave me?"
He put his head in his hands, was about to try with all his might to think something clever, but then he was reminded all the more of every previous thought, and even when he believed he had created something new and looked up, one of his four offspring approached him again. As he went through a narrow street towards home, he heard a lament from the window of one of the smaller cottages. He walked up and looked through the pane. A young girl stood at the bedside of a sick woman, and two small children sat wailing on the floor.
"Does no one take pity on this poor unfortunate woman?" said the girl, and raised her blue eyes to heaven.
At the same time she caught sight of Leonard, and shyly stepped back. Pity drew him inside. He opened the door of the house, and stepped into the sparse room. Here he saw the mother of the children, a young woman, pale and close to death. Leonard approached her, saying that the crying children had drawn his attention, and he asked her to accept some of his wealth. The ailing woman sat up and tried to thank him. She gestured to her children, who approached Leonard. He looked around and turned towards the older girl, for he expected her to approach him with a touching outburst of thanks. Instead, she withdrew even further and looked down at her hands. Her glances did not reach Leonard, although it was her glance that had caused him to enter this house of misery in the first place.
"Well now," thought Leonard, "this is certainly strange. The look she raised to heaven seemed to ask so urgently for help for these poor people, and now that it has been given, she acknowledges my generous action so little that she does not even give me a grateful glance." He saw this thought take shape next to him, and shrank from his own incredible stupidity, staring at him with dullard eyes. He became confused and took his leave, promising the family that he would visit them on the following day. He hoped to be rewarded with a friendlier glance from the girl for this promise, but in vain. She remained motionless and stared at the floor. As Leonard left the house in a foul humour, she escorted him to the door. He wanted to make the most of the favourable moment, and said as he grasped her hand, "Who could remain unmoved by such human suffering when the prettiest eyes are weeping because of it?" As Leonard closed his eyes that night, he found himself again in the cottage, and saw the girl with the sky-blue eyes. He spoke with her, and revealed his love for her, and she answered so sweetly that he dared to embrace her. He awoke and looked around disgruntled, for the dream had tricked him. He tried to fall asleep and conjure up that fair image again, but in vain. As he passed through the narrow street, and as he saw the house where he had experienced such strange events the previous day, he stood still and observed it carefully. He asked an old woman who was passing by about the people in the house.
"The people who live in this house?" cried the old woman. "Dear sir, nobody! This house has stood empty for many years. The owner boarded it up. He left, as I said, many years ago, and no one has set foot in it since. You can tell by the high grass that has grown up around the doorway."
"The old man will tell me whether this event really happened or was a dream," he thought.
"I know what brought you here," said the old man. "If you had loved her, she would not have disappeared."
I did not love her, cried Leonard. Her vision follows me incessantly. From the moment her glance first met mine, my heart was eternally hers.
Possibly some day you will learn what love truly means, said the old man. But for now you do not know what the feeling is.
And if this is not love, he said to himself, what emotion is it that forces me to think of her constantly? He immersed himself in thought, and unwittingly drew figures in the sand, as the old man had done before him. When he looked up, some time later, he saw the old man standing next to him, again weeping uncontrollably. Leonard was terrified and asked, "What troubles you?"
"The signs," the old man replied, "which you absent-mindedly drew in the sand, forced all the images of my suffering and my unfairness before my soul, and made you the master of all my actions. At my request, you erased all this sorcery. You have now forgotten the symbols. You will never be able to retrace them again, and fate will never be so favorable a second time."
"What?" cried Leonard. "I had magic powers all along, and never suspected it."
"Everyone has it."
The old man glanced lovingly back into the darkest part of his cave, and a faint white shimmer began to move. It floated closer to the table, and Leonard saw to his astonishment how the figure of the woman he had seen in the cottage emerged out of the darkness. She carried her youngest child in her arms, the other followed, holding the hand of the girl who had directed her sky-blue gaze at Leonard. Silently, the company took places at the table, and the old man indicated to Leonard that he should also take a seat. Astonished, he did so. The old man served his guests, and with friendly gestures encouraged them to eat. Leonard's eyes were fixed on the girl, and for the first time he saw how lovely she was. The blonde locks that fell about her shoulders, her slender frame, her delicate limbs, and the inexpressible grace that accompanied all her movements. The small repast was soon finished, and everyone rose from the table with a serious demeanor. The old man folded his hands and glanced down for several moments. A slight trembling seized the stately figures, and they withdrew into the darkness. A dull shimmer remained for a few moments, but soon this too dissipated. A wreath of fresh roses had hung in the blonde locks of the girl. When she stood up, Leonard noticed one rose fall from her hair to the ground. He approached the chair she had vacated, and to his great joy saw the lovely fresh rose on the ground. Quickly he bent down and picked it up. But how astonished he was when the bloom, which had just shone in all its resplendence, withered immediately in his hand. The old man watched him, smiled, and opened the door of the cave. Leonard then asked about the girl.
"I will tell you who she is," spoke the old man. "I want to speak now of my own sorrows, for they are now past. Once even I was young and loved and was happy. A girl who had won my heart became my wife. I had dedicated myself early in life to the magical arts, and many of the powers of nature stood in my thrall. I could have amassed much gold, but our contented hearts disdained all splendor and show. My wife and I lived in the small cottage where you first saw the girl, and we lacked for nothing. My wife bore me two daughters. I lost her with the birth of the second. My grief was indescribable. I felt deserted, and forgot for a time all the consolation the arts of alchemy could give me. Finally, I recovered enough to be able to think things through again, and I was comforted, for it stood in my power to continue my contact with my beloved Elvira. Every noon and every midnight my beloved would appear and bring my heart comfort and peace. She watched with purest love over our children. Thus pass several years of my life in this happy state. Finally, a young man won the heart of my eldest daughter. I advised her to put this love behind her, for I saw that his love did not deserve hers in return. She was beautiful, and it was only her beauty that attracted him. Against my wishes, she left my house. The ingratitude that repaid my love and care so badly made me angry, and I swore I would never forgive her. I saw my wife as often as usual, but she never mentioned the daughter who had left us, and she seemed to pour all her love into our second child. After several years had passed, she accused me of nursing my anger for too long and counseled me to forgive our eldest daughter. For the first time ever, I refused her something, and for the first time, her beloved shadow turned away from me indignantly. Several days later, I took a walk in the forest, and among the cliffs found this cave, which no one had ever noticed. I tarried here for a long while, and then hurried back home, so as not to miss the hour when Elvira visited me. As I entered my home, I saw an ailing person lying in the bed. Two children sat on the floor and wailed, and my second daughter stood next to the bed. I approached with great sympathy, but this benevolent feeling turned to rage when I recognized the sick woman as my eldest daughter. "What?" I exclaimed. "You dare to enter your father's house again, the father whose love you scorned, and whom you deserted so shamelessly?" As I was about to say more angry words, my darling Elvira stood before me.
"You are abusing love, the most sublime feeling of all humanity," she cried, "in hatred, and for that reason you are not worthy of love. Go, leave this house, which was not the only abode of love, and live among the animals of the forest. You will not see me again until love and compassion have repaired what your hatred and harshness have ruined."
She was the one who lulled my children into a gentle sleep, and who kept them from losing the years they were dreaming away. Each year, for 1 hour on the day that I insulted heaven with my rash act, my children take on the shape in which I found them, and they are visible to the eyes of a mortal. No one before you, however, had ever noticed them. After a time, my wife's spirit forgave me, and I was allowed to see my children at the time of day in which I had before enjoyed their company. With all my arts, I was able to make my younger daughter invisible from any man who desired her without truly loving her, for I wanted to protect her from a life of misery such as her sister had experienced. The unhappy girl very quickly lost the bloom of novelty for her husband, and he left her. She finally became so sick and miserable that she had dared come to me to beg for my pity. She became so weak before my arrival that her sister prepared her a bed, and I was cruel enough not to welcome her with love.
Tears flowed from the old man's eyes as he spoke.
"Now it is all past," he finally said. "I hope that from now on we will be happy. Follow me. It is noon, and you will find my children in the cave. Embrace your beloved, and if she does not disappear before your eyes out of your embrace, she will be yours. Elvira will be reconciled, and I will live in her company again."
The two of them went to the cave, where the table was prepared as on the previous day, and when the old man had set the places, the figures approached. Leonard's heart trembled with delight and fear. He went to the girl, and she looked gently at him. He took heart and wrapped her in his arms, pressing an ardent kiss to her lips. Still he saw her there before him. He could not believe his happiness, and he kissed her again and again. Kindly the old man joined them, and took her from Leonard's arms.
"I am happy again," he said, "and both of you are as well."
Leonard stayed true to his resolve to live in wisdom, for now he called love the greatest truth of all. He saw his thoughts no more, and so they appeared to him to be as reasonable as they had before, and he lived with his wife as happily as any human can. Lo smajna l-istorja ta' mara Ġermani oħra fos dawn il-kittieba Ġermaniżi nisa. Rajtu kemm kienu intelligenti dawn in-nisa wkoll il-kitba tagħhom tiġdu dan. Nittama li skoprejtu bħali teżor ta' ħrejjef verament mhux tas-soltu. Iżda serja tagħna il-ħrejjef l-erf u l-maġija tkompli biex niskopru aktar kittieba u din id-darba għandna xi ħadd iktar riċenti. Infatti, fil-programm li jmiss, se nitkellmu dwar il-kittieb kbir tal-20 seklu Italjan Italo Calvino, u fost ħafna xogħlijiet oħra minn tiegħu kiteb ħafna u ħafna ħrejjef. Se nsemmalkom fost oħrajn xi jitri li kiteb lil Eugenio Scalfari u wkoll waħda mill-ħrejjef tiegħu dwar ġaħan li jisima Ġufa. Mela, sal-programm li jmiss, jiena Margita Juice, insemmilkom.